Welcome to the Frequent Fear Podcast with your hosts, Lee Conway and Lee Malibu.
This episode of Frequent Fear Podcast is brought to you by Nightmarish Conjurings. For all your horror and scare attraction needs, go to nightmarishconjurings.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 9 of the Frequent Fear Podcast. I am back from my little hiatus. I am Lee from the unofficial Universal Orlando Podcast.
And I'm Lee from PUP Events.
I suppose I talked about it because I did the intro on the last show, so we've talked about it a little bit, that we are now part of the Haunted Attractions Network.
Yes, so everybody that's listening from there, welcome to you as well.
Yes, this is strange. So, right, anyway, as we always do, there's no waffle at the beginning of this. Lee, who are we talking to tonight?
In this episode, we are honoured to have the owner of Scare Tour, ScareCon Europe, and contributor also to the Haunted Attraction Network, we have Michael Bolton.
Yeah, he also writes for the Haunt Journal as well.
Ah, right.
I'll be honest, yes. I have not heard of that.
Oh, no, it's good. It's an app, and you can either listen to it, or you can read it, or you can read it while you're listening to it.
Very cool.
Very good. Yeah.
Awesome. Right. Well, let's talk to Michael then.
You're listening to Frequent Fear.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Lee. Hi.
Lee. Oh, yes, we have this trouble.
It wasn't difficult, was it? You're both called Lee. I should have got that one.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. It's a pleasure to have you on.
No problem.
Right, I'm going to ask you the same question that I ask every guest that we have on. And the first one is, take us back to your childhood and stuff. And not everyone has a love of scare attractions, but even though you're involved in it. But where does that come from?
I don't know. When I was a kid, I was absolutely terrified of horror movies, terrified of ghost trains, terrified I wouldn't go anywhere near them. I think I was 10 years old. My parents took me to Disney World and I cried and screamed and I didn't want to go in the Haunted Mansion. I just couldn't see why that would be fun, why I would want to go in there. But they dragged me in and it was still scary and I didn't like it. And they wanted to go again the next year and I still didn't like it in there. Liked about 13 or 14, I think about 13, I started getting into Stephen King novels. My parents, believe it or not, they used to put a horror movie on to make me go to bed. They said, oh, we'll watch a horror movie. And I would just go to bed because I didn't want to sit and watch them. And then for some reason, I wanted to watch Salem's Lot. So what was that? I must have been younger than that because that was 1979. Salem's Lot came on the TV and I sat and watched it. I don't know why. And it scared the crap out of me. And I can still imagine the little boy floating at the window, scraping to get in. And then I started reading horror novels and then I started reading horror movies. But I still wouldn't ever go in anything like this, never do anything live. And it wasn't until about 1998, I was in Florida, and it was just when the Haunted Mansion in Kissimmee had opened. We'd gone over to IAPA, you know, the trade convention. Mm. We went in the Haunted Mansion, and we were like three kids. I was terrified. We were hanging on to each other. We were so scared. Next day, we had a great laugh. Next day, went in back into the convention and was given tickets to go to Terror on Church Street.
Yeah. All right.
And since then, I've just kept looking for them, kept going further and further.
It is addictive. Scare attractions. It's killing me at the moment because we went to Halloween Horror Nights last year for the 25th. And it's like we looked at getting back this year and it's killing me that we're not going to get back out there this year.
It's funny because I always look at Halloween Horror Nights and I always think, oh, it looks so good. And I've been and I did enjoy it once I'd got my RIP tickets and passed all the queues and everything. But I don't find it overly scary.
No.
I love the theatrical, the sets and design and everything, but it's not scary. And compared to what we do over here, we do a lot better.
Yeah, but they're marketing it a very wide mainstream audience and it's difficult. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Halloween Horror Nights because if we do, you won't shut me up, so we need to get away from it.
Yeah. Just a quick one, Michael. As you were growing up, how did you spend Halloween?
We never really tricked or treated. I remember once when about 13, me and my sister, she's 4 years older than me, we went out, yeah, I think we went out trick-or-treating then, but yeah, it wasn't, it didn't really exist. I remember school telling us not to, you know, they're not selling sort of, the local shop's not selling eggs and flour because of people trick-or-treating, but we didn't do it. We didn't really do anything, certainly nothing like kids do today.
No, well, that's the American influence is finally sort of making its way over here a little bit, because we did it as kids, but it was, they didn't have pumpkins. We used to do it with a turnip. There's a blast from the past.
Yeah.
The smell of burning turnip takes me back to my childhood.
That's just
it's true. I mean, I think I must have been probably 15 or 16 before I had a pumpkin. Everything else were turnip.
Weird, isn't it?
Which were an absolute bugger to carve, though.
So when you started watching horror films, Michael, what sort of stuff? Weird slasher films are like sort of more creepy.
Oh God, yeah. No, face it, I'm a child of the, you know, I was born 69, but you know, I was growing up. My formative years were during the 80s. So we had a video, we had a video card, and I had full access to every single video nasty that was available.
Awesome.
Because they weren't rated back then, so. All the big, you know, Evil Dead when it was, before it was banned, and The Burning, and I Spit on Your Grave, and all these things. As a kid, I could walk into, young teenager, but I could walk into the video shop and pick them up. Friday the 13th movies, but I've seen all of those old classic 80s, Last House on the Left, some of the really, really nasty ones of that era.
So going by the government then, Michael, you should be a serial killer nightmare about now.
How do you know I'm not?
Well, this is true. Because apparently I should be as well, because I grew up with all that stuff.
It's not what you watch, it's what's in your mind. Yes, it might give you ideas and whatever, and there are lots of things linked, aren't there? Obviously the Jamie Bulger killers were linked to watching Child's Play, but
yeah.
I don't see it myself. They were just two sadistic little sods who wanted to kill a child.
Mm.
God. It was a bit dark, wasn't it?
Well, we are talking about horror. The first scare attraction, Michael, can you remember what it was?
Yeah, it was the Haunted Mansion.
Yes, you said.
It was in Kissimmee. Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. It was massive. It was huge. And it had, halfway through, there was an arcade. And you go all the way through, and then you came out in the arcade, and you stopped and played some games, and you had a drink, and played on the pinball, a lot of pinball machines. And then you suddenly realised, I've got to go for the other half of it. It was terrifying because I just didn't know what this form of entertainment was.
Whereabouts was that then, Michael? Was it at Old Town?
No, a bit further down from Old Town. If you know, I wouldn't say if you know Florida. Of course, you know Florida. you do run another podcast, the unofficial Universal Orlando podcast.
Oh, so thanks for the plug.
Yeah, of course, no problem. You owe me a fiver. It's down towards, where Medieval Times is, down on 192.
Yeah.
It's a little bit further, it's a little bit higher than that. So it's between Old Town and Medieval Times. It looked like a castle. If you've ever been down to Medieval Times in the last sort of 20 years, it's there. It's an old castle.
Okay.
And I think it's currently been turned into a theme restaurant, but it looks like a haunted castle.
Yeah.
It opened about a couple of years before Skull Kingdom did.
Yes, I never got to do Skull Kingdom. We were going to go and do it the first year we went, and someone we met there went, I wouldn't bother.
I heard that from a lot of people.
Yeah, and now it's not there, so that speaks volumes.
So you were saying that you went through, obviously, Nightmare on Church Street. So what was it an actor-based one, or was it a lot of animatronics at that point? Or
It was both. Terror on Church Street is very similar to, let's put it the other way around. Passage del Terror is very, very similar to Terror on Church Street. Very, the scenes are identical, most of them. The exorcist bed, the graveyard you go through to start with, the vampire, the woman with the stick, that they were in Terror on Church Street. So a lot of the scares were actor scares, but they also had some really good animatronics. There was an amazing scene where you open the door and you walked into the Bates, Psycho House, the Bates house, and Mother's in her wheelchair at the top of the stairs. Obviously, for those who don't know the film, Mother's dead and she's, a corpse and whatever. And just as Norman comes out the side dressed as Mother, the wheelchair, the body in the wheelchair bounces down the stairs with like mother screaming at you. And it was a really good diversion while that's bouncing down the stairs. You know, you can imagine dum, 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 and then the body shaking everywhere. And then a man dressed as a woman comes out on the side with a knife. So it was a mixture of animatronic and actors.
So after you'd done them, Michael, you said, you know, you were scared going through that haunted mansion. When did that change that you went, you know what, I love this and I want to do this more and more and more? Because it's weird. We've spoken to loads of people, like you said, who start off, like Lee for himself, first few we went through, he was scared of ghost trains and God knows what. And it's only as you get older where you go, actually, do you know what, I quite like these.
Yeah. It was from there, because that was, I'm trying to think. It might even have been sort of around about 2000, maybe 2001 that I did that, because it wasn't long after we came home. It was the opening year. So theme park people will know this. It was the year that Colossus opened at Fort Park. So 2002, went on the opening weekend to go and ride the new 10 looping roller coaster, and in their brochure they said, come in this year, Fright Nights. And that was like, oh my god, we're actually getting an American style Halloween event in Fort Park. And then obviously not long after that, Alton Towers announced that they were doing it, and that was when they brought Linton V. Harris over from America, right, to bring all the mazes into the Merlin parks. And that was really the big kickoff for this, you know, for what happened over here in the UK.
Because, you know, Luxor, pre-2000, there wasn't a lot over here. I mean, it's only since I've met Lee that I've realised how big the scare industry in this country actually is. Because if you're not involved in it, you don't see it.
It's really grown. Before then, about 97, you had Sheer Terror at Great Yarmouth, which was obviously very similar to Passage del Terror. Still trying to find somebody who's actually been through it and can tell me what was in there. I was too scared at the time to go in. I wouldn't go in. And, of course, Alien War. Alien War opened first. I think that was about 98, 99. Based on the Alien movies. And that's considered to be a scare attraction. So those were the first ones. But it was a couple of little farm parks, like Frightmare Over Farm. Even Stuart at Tully's wasn't doing anything these years. But it was Merlin that sort of introduced it, and people then started to realise there was a lot going on.
And then, you know, we're at where we are now, where everybody's doing it.
Yep, everybody is doing it. There's farm events up down the country, all the major theme parks are doing it. You've got, you know, people who have just done a couple of home haunts and then decided, you know, well, we can do this. You know, obviously, point in question, Lee's... We're talking to Lee. You know, Lee started off just scaring the trick-or-treaters, and now look all the stuff they do. So there's a lot of people that get into it. And if you know what you're doing, as long as you're clever and sensible, you can get into it quite, I wouldn't say quite cheaply, but it's quite easy to get into it. As long as you're sensible about what you're doing and how you're doing it.
Yeah.
What would have been the first scare attraction you actually knew about in this country, and which one did you go through first?
First one in this country, I'd heard of Alien War, but didn't really consider what it was or anything like that. The first one I did in this country was the freezer at Fort Park, i.e. which soon became the asylum.
Yeah.
So that was, and as I've often said, that was one of the most intense scare attractions we've had in this country for years. So for that to be my first one, that was absolutely terrifying. And in opening year, it was a genuine maze. You could get lost in there.
Was that, would that have been before Tom Spiller or after?
Before, definitely.
Before?
Yeah.
So what did you think when you went through it then? Because at that time, would it just been a strobe maze like it was, obviously, when it turned into the asylum?
No, pretty much the same theme. A freezer, obviously lots of chain link fencing, again, all the strobe maze lights, but again, the white walls with blood splattered everywhere. The attraction very hardly changed in the 12 years it was running there. The route was you went a different way round, but it was exactly the same. And although it was called the freezer, I think some of the people inside were, I think they were just victims who'd been cut up, but you know, it very quickly morphed into the asylum, and you never really noticed any difference. That maze for all that time was the same maze, basically, just with a different route.
It were a good maze, though.
Mm. I miss it. I don't think Fort Park have got anything as intense as that. It was one that you could always have good bit of fun in.
So, like, going away from the theme parks, what would have been the first time that you actually came across like an independent attraction?
First independent would have been Over Farm in Gloucestershire, which is now Frightmare, which is a great event. We went to this year. They used to do a trailer ride. It used to be the old style trailer ride, like a flatbed trailer with a few bits of hay on, and you would sit on it and you would bounce along, and you know, that you were always terrified you were going to fall off the back. No real story the first couple of years. It was just, you know, random scares while you're out on the field. But it was brilliant. It was genuinely scary. And it's one of the things that Stuart from Tully's always talks about as being one of the first events that he experienced and encouraged him to grow and do it. So it was just something that Robert Overfarm, you know, wanted to do. And I don't know how much you know, over few years of talking to Rob and getting to know the farm and whatever, I used to work with another couple of guys, and I approached Rob at Over Farm and said, you know what, how would you like to make this event a bit bigger? Would you like us to build you a haunted house? And he agreed, and that's why we bought a marquee, and we created that year we created an attraction called the Mausoleum. And when people would then go on the trailer ride, and then when they get off, they had a haunted walkthrough to go through. That was the start of Frightmare, as it is now become. And now they've got, you know, they still do the haunted hay ride, and they've got five scare mazes there. And that was the start of our showing them, you know, what they can actually do with a walkthrough maze.
And what year was that?
You don't know. Probably early, probably about, maybe about 2005, maybe about 2005, so about 7 years ago. No, more about 11 years ago.
Yes. I mean, was that before you started reviewing?
No, the reviewing came about as an accident, really. We ran another website. I remember Kevin, who I was friends with at the time, said, I've got this idea of this like listings website, you know, because if we like doing this stuff, surely somebody else will like doing it. And we're like, yeah, well, yeah, nothing's going to come of it. It's, you know, it's a bit of fun. That's all it was ever meant to be, you know, a bit of fun. Then we found out about, so we did Over, then we knew, it was obviously the year Fort Park did theirs and Alton. Broadditch Farm were doing something. So we got to about three or four events that year. It was only by the second year of doing stuff. I remember Stuart inviting us back for Tully's, and it was like, oh, you know, what did you think? And so we were writing, because we were getting followers on Facebook and whatever, I was writing little reviews, and then it got to the point people wanted reviews from us. Now, I was the one who wrote all the reviews on the old Haunted Attractions website.
Yeah.
But people wanted, you know, they didn't want And I got on the trailer ride, and then a zombie jumped out at me, and then there was a big bang, and then we were chased off the truck. You know, nobody wants that.
No.
What people want is, it's like a movie. You don't want to hear the whole plot line of the movie. You just want to know what was good and what was ever. And I was getting more and more good reaction to my reviews. And that was when more and more places started coming out of the woodwork. And the more they came out of the woodwork, the more we traveled to see them. And as you know, we're certainly... I mean, it was me a lot back then traveling, but now obviously we've split away from them about 7 or 8 years ago, and I've just been running Scare Tour on my own. But if a new event is opening at the other side of the country, the first thing I'll be doing is looking to see if I can get up there on a flight or drive or move anywhere. And I'll travel 4 or 5 hours just to go to a scare attraction and get the review. And if I don't go to places, or, you know, I've now got a team around us, but if we don't get to go to a place or review them, they're upset because people want to review, because hopefully they see that we're we're honest, we give you, you know, we give you decent feedback. And you know, it's just building the industry. So it's really grown. And it gets harder and harder each year to work out where we're gonna go and how many things we're gonna go to.
So just slightly going back to the Haunted Attraction, when you first started that, like the website up, obviously it must have been in the early days of the web. What was the contents on there? Was it like a forum based thing, or because obviously before you started reviewing, were it just people chatting about scare attractions?
Yeah, basically we had a little forum on there. There's certain people, so everyone probably knows Mark Lofthouse from Atmosphere. He was, I think, when we first started, he was a 14, 15-year-old kid. And, you know, his avatar, believe it or not, was Atmosphere's number one fan. he'll hate me for saying that, but, you know, because now he's gone on to work for Atmosphere.
Yeah.
But, quite a few people like that. It was just a little community, and then people wanted to read the reviews and see what was going on. You know, we had listings, you know, rough where to go, what to do. We posted news. To be honest, the general format of what I do on Scare Tour now is very similar. Just there's obviously a lot more there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back a little bit more because I want to go back in. Michael, when you started going through scare attractions and you were scared of them and stuff, when you eventually got to liking them, what was it about it that drew you in?
I just want to correct you on that. I still get scared.
Fair enough, right?
If I didn't get scared, I don't think I could enjoy them. It's that fun element of going in. It's like going on, you know, as you know, I've mentioned about roller coaster, you know, theme parks, or whatever. I was a big roller coaster fan and theme park fan, so I like that whole safe adrenaline. I'm not a skier. I don't ice skate. I've got too far to fall if I'm doing anything like that. I'm no good at those sort of things, you know, those sort of adrenalines. But on a roller coaster, scare attraction or whatever, you can go in, you know you're going to have fun, you get your heart racing, but then you come out laughing, and you've not been damaged. And that's what I like. So it's just the thrill and excitement of what it gives you.
Are there any particular elements of scare mazes that you sort of seek out more than others? You know, like for me, I'm a big fan of the theatrical side of it. Rather than the jump scares, I want to see a theatrical performance as part of it.
Yeah, see, I like a theatrical performance, but I find sometimes they do get in the way of the scares. You know, sometimes an event can be too theatrical and too much arm waving, and I am the ghost of so and so, and I bring you my death, and it's like I'd rather you just jumped out and scared the crap out of me.
Right.
You know, but there is a fine mix. You know, if you have an event that is just jump scares all the time, it can be a bit tiring. I mean, we were talking about the freezer stroke asylum at Fort Park. That was purely jump scares. There was no theatrics to that. There was, because it was just people constantly in your face, and it worked. But I sort of quite like a mix of the two. I don't like it too theatrical. Don't like it too crazy. You know, I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a big fan of being sort of really, really shocked or offended. So I don't particularly need to see nudity or anything. Do you know what I mean? Some people can shock in a different way. To me, it has to be fun. But if I can't walk out laughing, give you an idea, Project Fear that I did by GNG, which was one of the more extreme ones, you know, one of the probably the first sort of extreme ones. I just walked out there and I'm like, oh, that was a bit weird. Even more so, Psychomantium at Scare Kingdom. You know, I came out of there after having supposedly simulated my finger up a man's bum.
yeah. Are you sure it was only simulated?
You know, golden showers, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know, I've heard later versions, you get sort of in your mouth and stuff like that.
What?
Yeah, they squirt hot water, hot salty liquid in your mouth to pretend the guy you've got your finger up his bum is in your mouth. And you know, there was lots of nice, there was like some naked people, there were waving around in my face, and I came out and the producers of the show were standing there and they're like, well, yeah, really excited, well, what did you think? And I just went, that was disgusting, and I wasn't scared once.
Right.
And I don't think they were expecting that reaction because it didn't scare me and I didn't enjoy it. It was just like, well, what am I putting myself through this for? It wasn't fun. And to me, I've got to enjoy it. If I'm traveling somewhere, I want to have fun. I want to be able to come out laughing. I want to have a good memory of my time. Even if I was terrified in there, I still want to go, oh, wasn't that so funny when that happened? Not like, oh my God, I've just simulated having my finger stuck up a man's bum.
See, that's not a scare attraction for me. I'm gonna throw Lee under the bus a little bit here. Let's talk about Cracked for a second. Now, Michael, I know you didn't go through it because that would have actually been.
No, because he was allergic to horses.
Yeah, that was his excuse. Anyway,
to be honest, I'm so glad that I was allergic to horses. I wasn't looking forward to it, but I was going to do it. But then the more I heard about it and what was going to happen, I said to Lee, the horses thing, you've only got to put me in a room with a horse and my whole chest swells up and I'm close to dying. And what I said was, if that happens, I need access to fresh air, fresh water, my pills. I can't be put in a box. I can't have a bag over my head. You can't do anything with me or you will kill me. And that was when they ruled me out on medical grounds, having now seen Cracked, seen what the people have done, and I'm obviously now good friends with a lot of the people from Cracked, and then some people went through it obviously at the weekend, including Mikey, and Matthias is a reviewer for Scare Tour as well, and it's like it's not my thing. I if Lee said to me tomorrow, right, here you go, I've got tickets to come to Cracked, it's not my thing. I'm not a physical person. I'm not the sort of person who challenges myself to do Tough Mudder. I like my food, but I'm not going to be forced to eat anything that I don't want to eat. I'm interested in what the whole thing is, but even if you begged me, Lee, to come to Cracked, I wouldn't do it. It's not my sort of thing.
I totally understand, and to be honest with you, it's one of them Marmite things, and it's. Mm. And I think, no, we've talked about it a lot, and really it's your conversation, so I don't want to talk about it too much. But the fact is that the majority of the people that go through it are not scare attraction fans. It's other things, and it's that it's endurance and stuff like that. So, but it's it's going from one extreme to another. I mean, it's the more extreme version. Of everything else. And I mean, just going back, I mean, we had sort of like Dominic McChesney on the other week, and obviously he works a lot with Linton Viaris, and Linton Viaris is staunchly against any actors touching the people that go through. I mean, what's your views on that, Michael? Is like, would you, do you mind a little bit of touching, or are you quite happy that you think that you think that they should not touch you?
I don't think anybody's averse to a little bit of touching.
Everyone likes a little bit of touching. It's interesting. The whole touching thing brought out a very interesting argument. Linton appeared at ScareCon about 4 years ago. He was our guest speaker, and he obviously created a lot of the mazes at Fort Park. It was the year that Fort Park had decided that they were going to allow touching.
Yeah.
And a bit of an argument actually broke out between sort of Fort Park and Linton. It was only Laura who was there, not so much Fort Park, but the manager at the time.
Yeah.
Because the argument was, he said, under no circumstances should you do it. If you're touching people, it's a weak scare. You're opening your actors up to potential violence, and that you should be able to do it. A decent actor should be able to do it without touching.
Yeah.
The Laura from Fort Park at the time sort of argued that, we are doing it. We can do it with discretion. It's discreetly. If you're breaking people's boundaries, you can touch them. And it is freaky when you've got someone who's a bit mad or whatever, and they're touching your hair and they're doing stuff. Problem is, once you've broken that boundary, it can then go a bit too far. So I remember we were in, we seem to be talking about the freeze or the asylum at Fort Park a lot, but we were in there and one of the inmates threw a pillow at us or something. And because it was a tea towel, it was something that should have been innocuous, but it caught somebody in the eye. Right. And the person in my team was like walking out, going, "Oh my god, that you know, the corner of the tea towel flipped them in the eye." And that's the problem you get. Now, I've been through so many attractions where actors have accidentally touched people. I've worked in attractions where I've accidentally touched people. There was a comment last year at ScareCon, wasn't there, about how one of Steph Ricketts, one of the most experienced scare actors in the country, jumped out, punched somebody in the face, and then suddenly realised, "Oh my god, I've just killed Scare Tour because she punched me in the face." So it happens, and I think if you say it's not supposed to happen, then people can accept it as an accident. But then if you start touching people, then it's a bit harder. But you know, if you touch them a bit harder than they should have done, do they think, "Oh god, I've been assaulted" or "I've been attacked"? But it can be really effective if you can manipulate people and push them and move them around. So I don't have a set opinion on it. It all depends. If it's just touching for the sake of touching, in a normal maze, it doesn't work. But to give you an idea this year, let's bring back straight up to date. If subspecies, the end games, hadn't allowed touching, that maze wouldn't have worked as well as it did, because the whole surprise element near the beginning is when you got pulled away from your group, and you could never have done that without touching people. And that element of touching really shocked people. So I'm all for it. As Lee said, I'm all for a bit of touching.
So I take it something like McKamey Manor's totally out of your wheelhouse.
Totally, 100% out.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't do that.
No.
I was friends with Ross on here for a while. And I was part of the reservations page. And in the end, I said, "Look, guys, I'm never going to do this. So you guys get on with it." I think I'm probably still friends with Ross, but I don't watch the videos anymore. I'm not interested in, I do consider it, and I know it's not, I know torture, and I know if Ross does listen to this, you know, this is not an attack on Ross in any way, shape or form, but it goes back to what I was just saying about Cracked. It's like, to me, it's an element of torture. It's an element of physical, torture is the wrong word. It's physical stuff that I don't like. You know, I don't run marathons. I don't do Tough Mudder. I'm not a physical person. So why the hell should I go for a scare attraction that's physical? And I like my scares to be scary because they're fun. They're theatrical. It's a zombie or a creature or whatever. I don't want my scares to be, "Oh my God, I actually think I'm going to die because you're holding my head in the water."
Yeah.
I can see why it's scary and I can see why people want to get out, but I don't want that sort of scare.
No, I mean, I've said this to Lee after I came out of Cracked. That Cracked not a scare attraction for me. That's not to say I didn't get something out of it, Lee. I'm not saying that. But it's not what I would consider a scare attraction.
No.
No, and I'd agree with both of you. And I've never said anything different because I think it's just something different. But I mean, it's not something, if I was going to a scare attraction, it's not something that I would be looking for. I would never go through Cracked, you know, because I like my scare attractions more theatrical. That's just the way that I am, and it's everybody's got their own personal point of view. But the other thing as well is that I were having a conversation yesterday with Mark Lofthouse on Facebook, I do, regarding sort of like the sort of how much the UK scare attraction industry is diversifying a lot faster than the American scare attraction industry is. Which I'm sure that, have you got any views on it, Michael? Because it's just that we seem to be sort of moving a lot faster than the, like, as American counterparts are moving.
We are, when you think they're so far ahead of us, and you know, you've only got to look at their trade shows. You know, ScareCon is tiny in comparison to what they do over there. But a lot of you watch a lot of videos and whatever, and a lot of what Americans do. Again, I know this is go out globally, so obviously no disrespect to Americans. And I've already mentioned this on. I write for Haunted Network Journal, and I've done a whole article about the difference between America, US and America. The Americans really, really like their animatronics, their big sets, their props, you know, spending £1,000 on a TV screen that's got a monster that jumps out at them. I mean, I love them. I've seen all these sort of effects at IARPA, and they are outstanding. They're amazing, but they don't have the unique element that a human being can do. You know, an animatronic can only reach out to a certain point. It can only do this. It can't sense where you are. It can't follow you. It can't hear what your name is and start whispering your name in your ear. So I think there is quite a big difference in the attraction styles. You've only got to look at something like London Bridge Experience and the London Tombs when it first opened. I remember talking to one of the guys there, who's now long gone, and he was saying, oh yeah, he said, well, we won't have any actors down in the tombs, we're just going to have animatronics, because let's face it, if anybody breaks anything, we can just replace the animatronic. And it was like, it's not just about replacing the animatronic or getting the animatronic to do it. The human beings bring the edge to it. So I mean, that's the big difference between us. We're growing at a pace, but we're relying more on actors' story.
Yeah.
And you know, with good actors, you could scare somebody in an empty room.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to look every inch beautifully set, decorated, and full of props and whatever. So it's definitely a big difference between us and the US.
I know Mark was saying that he thought that it was a lottery. It was because that obviously the great heritage we have with theatrical, that everything's like going towards that more than it is towards the animatronics. But I mean, what my point, personal point of view is the fact is that because in America it's predominantly seasonal, so it's like October, and then there's not much about until the next October, is that if you've got a new attraction that brings a fresh idea in, is that the most of America has to wait until next year until another attraction uses that idea. But because over here that we're like opening attractions on like, well, weekly basis, in my monthly basis, is the fact is that if I create an attraction tomorrow and somebody walks through it and goes, I love that idea, that they can actually instigate it into an attraction within a week or a month. So everything just seems to be moving just a lot faster. The fact is that ideas are picked up a lot faster than they are in America.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. We are growing so rapidly. Well, as I say, we're talking about a business, and you know, I was saying that the first one was 2012. That's like only 14 years ago, whereas America's been doing this for years.
Yeah.
But going back on to your sort of the conversation about them getting sort of being less actor-driven and more animatronic-driven, I think as a theme park fan, and having been out to Florida a lot over the last 10 years, the theme parks are getting like that as well. A lot of the attractions that would have a live actor in them are slowly getting eradicated from the parks in favour of an automated spiel or an animatronic or something like that. And it's something we lament quite a lot. And it's sad, it really is, because it means every time you go through an attraction with an actor, it's going to be different depending on how you catch that actor at that time. If you go through with an animatronic, it's going to be the same every time you go through.
Yeah, no, it is.
You know, I mean, the problem is that nowadays everything is ruled by the almighty dollar, or the almighty pound, depending on where you are. And that's where it comes down to. It's cheaper to put something that's just going to keep doing its job over and over again, and you might have to fix it every now and then, pay someone a wage to do it.
I know, but having a person in there gives you the more personal touch, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, obviously the first scare attractions you went through was like at Halloween or in October. When was the first time that you sort of, you can remember an outer season attraction coming on like, so people were going through that?
I can't think of what my first out of season one. I think it was probably something by Gary and Gavin at G&G. They really started pushing things like Scary Tales was out of season. I think their first one, what was it called? Not Torment. I can't remember. But yeah, they were one of the first companies to start doing different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do things out of season, but we still try and keep them to a season, you know, like London Bridge do Easter events and Scare Kingdom do Valentine's events and Christmas events. So, yeah, they were probably the first ones I remember.
Yeah, in fact, I think going back to like episode one, which we interviewed like Gary, he seemed to think that Scary Tales was... Hybrid X would have been your first review for Scare Tour?
No, I did their first event, which was... I don't even know. It was in... Where was the cricket place you did your first one, Lee?
That would have been Scary Tales, would have been at the Playhouse. But the year before they did one, which was...
Because I came up for that one.
So that would have been the year before they did Scary Tales. Scary Tales were the year after.
I wouldn't say Deranged or Twisted. It was around about...
Deranged, that's it.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, we've done that. But, yeah, they've done quite a few out of town. I didn't get up to Scary Tales. I know quite a few people did. I did Hybrid X.
That would have been the first scare attraction I actually went through as well.
Aw.
Yeah. Chased by a gingerbread man, more memorable, yeah.
I thought you were going to say a ginger there.
Yeah, I thought you were.
So, over the many years, not trying to cast aspersions on your age, Mr. Bolton, but any funny stories that have happened? Because it's funny, we've been talking about Gary quite a lot on this night, and some of the things that he told us that... I think the funniest story, going back to episode one, that Gary told us was him first testing out waterboarding on himself in the bath.
Yeah.
Have you got any stories like that? No. Nobody's got any stories like that.
I waterboarded myself in the bath. there's so many different things that, you know, happened at different times. People have laughed at. One of the things that always amuses me is we created a mini scare attraction at Leisure Industry Week at the NEC, and with the smoke pouring out and the noise and whatever, it basically was the biggest, it was like the hit attraction of the show. People were coming to learn about business stuff and whether, you know, what they were going to build at their theme park and whatever, and it's like, oh my god, there's a scare attraction in the corner. Mm-hmm. And I must dig out the video and put it on Scare Tour. I found it the other day. But the walls were, they were made of, the whole layout on the walls were made of, it's just the frame that you use for displays. And if you leant on a wall too much, the wall would pop out. So the poor maintenance guy, I probably still got his number in my phone. We would have to call him every couple of hours or so because he would have to come put the wall back in. He had to like unkey something and put something on. But we sent this group in and they were absolutely terrified. And there was this quite big guy in the middle. And I think it was Sam who just jumped out from the side. We had like a window and he just jumped out the side. And generally this was where we lost a lot of the walls. Because people would hit the wall and then knock it over. And this guy hit the wall with such force. Imagine a wall clipped in, you know, it was, I don't know, a 3 or 4 foot panel. But it only unclipped on one side.
Right.
So... He got scared. He jumped so violently against the wall. The wall swung open. He was stood out in the main... Obviously, it was pitch black inside. He was stood outside in the main show of LIW with people walking past, and the wall slammed shut behind him. His friends and everyone kept going on, and the look on his face was an absolute picture. Because it was like, how the hell did they do that? He'd say, oh, look, would you like to go back in again? But he just... It was just so funny the way he just, you know, he said one minute he was in the pitch black, something jumped out, and the next minute he said it was like he was transported.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah, if you could ever come up with that effect, that would be, you know, to do that properly.
So obviously we're coming up to near to ScareCon. What gave you the idea for the first ScareCon?
Ah, good question.
It was... So we've been running the review site for a few years, and there was talk at the time. A lot of people were talking about should we have some way of getting people together. So I think Stuart from Tully's might have said something to me at some point. I think Jason at Atmosphere, and you know, people were saying, there was ideas about, and we'd said about maybe we should get people together. So what we did was, it was at Leisure Industry Week. I just knew there were loads of people who did scare attractions. So we announced it. Leisure Industry Week were really good. And they said, well, if you're going to take people away from our show, why don't we sponsor with you and get involved? So we had, it was just an afternoon session with anybody who was to do with scare attractions. And we had London Bridge talking about their event. And I think Stuart talked about his. And I think we had one other talk. And the idea was to say, look, you know, here's a bit about history about what people have done. This is something you can learn. Would people be interested in getting together, like, you know, to create a trade association, you know, best practice, a way of working together? And we got sort of 45 people on that first event. And from then it was just like, right, well, let's keep going. There's obviously is a demand for it. And I mean, you saw how many people were at ScareCon last year and how many people buying tickets for this year. You know, the industry's huge. But there's a massive demand for people want to, generally, people want to come along, they want to share, they want to talk to other people, they want to find out what other people are doing. And yeah, we just sort of hit on a need that was required at the time. And it just keeps going and going. And not being controversial, you know, a few people have come and gone, tried to create rival events, and they've just fallen by the wayside because ScareCon has got a good reputation, has got a good name, and people like coming. And I keep mixing it up, trying to do different things for people. You know, it's never been the same year on year. And people enjoy it because it's the mix of business, stuff you can learn, things you can buy, go and see a scare attraction itself, you know, try and get some experience, and then at the end of the day, go and have a laugh. So
yeah,
it goes back to why I like scare attractions. You know, it's all the serious bit, but then I also like to have fun with it.
That's it. I mean, me and Tracy came down for it last year, and for all we're not really involved in the sort of commercial side of it, we still enjoyed a lot of the presentations and stuff. But like you say, the fact that we had we got to go through Saw Live and the Haunted Lanterns. I mean, the Haunted Lanterns maze that we went through Saw Live last year, something that we can't stop talking about. It absolutely blew us away. The fact that we got to go through just the two of us as well. And there was only one actor in it. I think that was the worst thing, that,
yeah,
like, it was the anticipation of someone being there more than the person actually being there. And because Tracy had the lantern, so she was sort of lighting the way, and there was no other light in there. We were shouting at each other and there was all sorts going on. It was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it.
It was awesome.
Sadly, I was too busy setting up for the evening event and I missed that, and I'm really gutted that I did.
And that was brilliant as well, you know, with the... I've never seen the Circus of Horrors. Tracy's seen them a lot of times. That's the first time I've seen them. And one of the highlights of that night, I will say, is we were sat on the table with Brett Jones. And watching Brett during the sword swallowing act was the funniest thing I have ever seen. That lad does not like sword swallowing acts. And he was watching it like a little kid watching a horror film through his fingers.
Well, I'm currently in discussion with Dr. Hayes about what's going to happen this year. You know, we're going to get the freaks are going to come out and get a lot closer this year.
Oh, I'm not going to be there. I'm gutted.
It's too far south.
I'm going to sit. Michael, it's too far south. five and a half bloody hours it took us to drive there last time.
Yeah, well, I've got a venue in mind for next year, which will be slightly nearer to where you live.
Good.
I mean, this will be my... I think it's fourth.
Fourth
year. The one thing that I sort of, the first year that we went, well, Blackpool. So there was
up north sometimes.
Yeah, it's true. And the beer was a lot cheaper. We were there the same year that a baby boy, little Sean Roos, were there for his first year with his dad. And we were sort of like struck on it from day one. It's just such a sort of happy event, and it's such fun, and then at night time you can let your hair down a little bit and sort of have a laugh, and I also think it's just like the gateway to Halloween, I know we're sort of still quite a lot of months away, but it's, you know, is the, there's always like a few teasers or a few reveals, and obviously everybody's like pushing ready for Halloween. It's, so I think it's, in theory, I always look at the sort of ScareCon is the last time we all can sit and relax together, because the next time is that we're all sort of, we're meeting each other at each other's attractions. So
yeah,
it's,
that's
such fun.
That's exactly what it's meant to be. And funny you said about, you know, announcements made or teasers are made. This year we've got people who are coming to ScareCon just to make announcements. It's been out there for a while. You would have seen it if you've looked closely at the website. But Fort Park, for example, are coming to ScareCon to announce their Fright Nights lineup for this year. Awesome. We will get that exclusively. For those who you're probably aware, we're currently working with all our reviews. We're working together to get a book, which is going to be like the good beer guide, but it's called the Good Fear Guide. As part of that, we have asked a number of different attractions to tell us what they're doing for 2016. Not everybody has given us their information, but a lot of people have, and a lot of that information is embargoed until Friday the 13th at ScareCon. So, with the idea that, you know, ScareCon is where they announce what they're doing, so we know the lineup for a number of different attractions who've told us what they're going to do this year. We've got the guys from Dreamland, who obviously are hosting at Dreamland, who created Screamland. They're announcing their big event, what they're going to be doing this year. So I want it to get to a point, because generally around about May, June time, most big attractions will know what they've got, especially if you're at a theme park or something like that. You'll have signed off the budget. You know what you're doing. And it's the perfect time to get people starting, you know, getting excited. And for someone like Fort Park to say, you know, their press release will say it was exclusively revealed at ScareCon today that blah, 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 we're bringing X and X. So, or whatever it might be. I can't say that that's going to be two attractions. I couldn't possibly confirm or deny anything. But do you see what I mean? And it is, yeah. I think it is the start of the Halloween season. And it's just meant to be, it's meant to be fun. I hope people enjoy it and people really do look forward to it. It always used to be a Thursday event, because in my brain, I always thought of it as a business event, as a day event, and why would anyone want to do something on a Friday? But it's clearly, it's a bit of both. It's daytime businessy, but in the evening it's all about actually talking and relaxing with other people and just having a chat over a pint of beer, you know, a pint and some food about, oh, what are you doing, how did you do that, and how did you get over this, and you know, how did you find X or whatever. So, you know, everyone seems to be talking and doing stuff. I'm obviously floating around like a social butterfly trying to talk to everyone, and it's a bit like at your wedding day when you get to bed at the end of the night and you go, God, did you speak to my mother, or did you do this, or did you do that? That's what I'm like every ScareCon. I think, oh my God, those people came all the way down from Scotland and I started talking to them and so-and-so came in and I got dragged away. But yeah, people are happy. Yeah, you have a few people that come one year and then don't come again, but generally we have a big returning audience each year, and it keeps getting bigger.
Yeah. So, just slightly diverting from that, is that what is your view regarding the fact is that the majority of people that like scare attractions also adore theme parks? I mean, I know somebody that was sort of probably a young member of Roller Coaster of Great Britain Club, and what's your view? We generally find that, I mean, that I would say that ScareCon night is three quarters talking about scare attractions, but the other 25% is always roller coasters.
I think it's the same sort of audience. If you like having fun but in a controlled environment and like, you know, you like a thrill, they are exactly the same. The feeling you get when you've walked off of a roller coaster and when you've walked out of a scare attraction is exactly the same. You've had you've had an intense period of exhilaration, excitement, terror, whatever, and then you come back down to earth and you have a laugh about it. So yeah, I think there is a massive crossover between the two, and I have obviously played into that by hosting ScareCon at theme parks for the last couple of years. You know, it worked well at Fort Park. This year is Dreamland. I know yourself, Lee, you wanted to go down to Dreamland, and so, of course, the second I announced what was going on, you went, this is brilliant, I can kill two birds with one stone, because we're giving everybody who comes gets access to Dreamland the day after. And, you know, those who come to Fort Park, I know they who came to the event last year, I know they weren't supposed to. You weren't supposed to sneak off of the island where the marquee was, but you all did.
I didn't.
Yeah,
but no, I didn't. I wish I'd bloody known, though. I was gutted I never got to ride Swarm.
We all sneaked off and rode Swarm, I must admit.
I remember the guys from Generation Z. Bear in mind, these guys are from New Zealand. You know, they hadn't been over in London long. And they just came up and they said, well, what time are we talking? And I said, 5. And they said, oh, yeah, what were we listening to before then? And I said, oh, I think it was something that they weren't overly interested in because they were a different style of event. And they just went, can we go around that roller coaster out there? Looks awesome. Can we go ride it? And I just went, just walk under the barrier. No one's going to stop you. I mean, I should have stopped them because that wasn't part of my deal. You know, they shouldn't have gone in there. But it worked well being there. And I liked the atmosphere of being in the theme park. It's going to be the same with Dreamland, you know. There are going to be normal people walking around. We've got a lot of closed off areas, and during the day you can go and wander into the theme park and go on the roller coaster if you want. But the thing is, it's so busy during the day. There's so much going on. What I want people to do is enjoy the day, enjoy the night, and then what I'm hoping all of us with a hangover will go back into the park on the Saturday and just go and enjoy it. And then you can continue more conversations about what you're doing, and so it should be fun.
Not when I'm not there, it won't be.
So, I mean, with that crossover, how much are you looking forward to Darren Brown's Ghost Train?
Really looking forward to it. Not personally a lover of Darren Brown. Found some of his stuff quite interesting in the past. I'm not blown away by him. You know, I watch his stuff, but don't find it amazing. Been watching this though and what they're building. I mean, obviously some of the most recent images, I'm really intrigued about. Have you seen all the posters about anti-fracking and it's something about keep it down below? So obviously the story is going to be something about, it's going to be very current, very modern, about we've been doing fracking and we've released something. There's obviously a demon or something that comes out. I've seen some of the in show VR, you know, clips of, well, not clips, but pictures of what it looks like. I think it's going to be a really interesting mix. The only thing I'm concerned about is I've done Virtually Dead, which was a virtual reality, was advertised as a virtual reality scare attraction. And the virtual reality bit, although absolutely amazing and very realistic, I genuinely felt I was in the environment, is not photo real. It's a cartoon. The second you put that headset on, you knew you were in a cartoon, you were in a computer game. And I am worried that what I would have liked Darren Brown to be, or what I still would like Darren Brown to be, is completely realistic. So what I'm seeing from my video goggles is going to be real. But it's going to be a mix of everything. There's some live action in there. Clearly, the demon character that's been flying, that's been running around the theme park recently, that's going to be in there. So it's going to be a mix of ride, scare, ghost train, and scare attraction. So very excited about it.
Is it quite worrying, the amount of VR that's floating about at moments?
Yes, completely.
I just think that you know, it's probably an easy thing, and what I sort of worry is the fact is that, you know, that a lot of scare attractions now may look towards using VR. It's the transition period between not being VR to being VR, which I think is the most difficult thing to keep you still immersed.
Yeah. Well, Virtually Dead, which advertised itself as the world's first virtual reality scare attraction, started off live action. You went for a number of different scenes. It was probably a bit like a poor man's Generation of Z. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't quite as polished as Generation Z, but it was a fun scare event, and it was all about, the story was, you were going to, there was a zombie outbreak in Arizona, and you were going to be trained up to go, and you were having to go through all these different missions to do it. And they introduced the zombies and different things. And then suddenly you all get separated, all put into your separate rooms, and there's a guy there, or girl, and they put you into the virtual reality headset, and they say, right, this is your training program. We want to see how you get on. So if we were to ship you to Arizona, and then when they press the button, you are in this cartoon, well, it's a computer game, and it is actually a computer game. It's something called Arizona Sunshine, and it comes out later this year. It's one of the big HTC Vive games that they're promoting. But I just played 10 minutes of a video game, really just getting into it, you know, and it was immersive. It felt like it was in this environment, and, you know, when the zombies landed on top of you and whatever, you know, you did duck and you fell all over. He's going to hate me for saying this, but Sam Cousins was in it as well. And at one point there's a virtual reality crate that the guns are on, and you can duck, you can move, you know, it's so responsive. But he thought, oh, what I'll do, I'd be really clever. I'll get down on my knee and I'll lean on the crate. There was no crate. He's in an empty box of a room. And he went to lean on the crate and he just fell forward, which I find quite amusing. But that was the whole thing in there was really good. Then suddenly it's like sirens, where, and they take it all off your head and say, oh my God, you know, the zombies have escaped. And then you go back to a real normal scare attraction walking through the dark. And it's like the two didn't work together. Right. The scare attraction thing was great. The virtual reality was great, but nothing else in between.
Okay. Right, well, we're getting close to the end, Michael, so I have one final question for you. We've been going an hour, believe it or not. What does the future hold for Michael Bolton?
For me? How am I supposed to live without you?
Oh, that's what my wife says. Oh, no, I'm getting confused with Lee.
Behave, you two. Right. I think ScareCon right, so what, there's two sides to me. There's obviously ScareTour news and reviews and all of that sort of stuff, and that will keep growing. We will keep going off and doing things. The ScareCon side will just keep getting bigger and bigger as more attractions open and more people come, and I've got to challenge myself each year to keep coming up with different stuff. And the other thing we haven't spoken about, which I'm just going to drop in here, is, well, I have in my past, I have designed a number of scare attractions, and I still get asked by a number of people, can you come, you know, can you help this, can you do this? So I do consult for a number of people. The last big attraction I designed end-to-end was the Ghost of Christmas in Glasgow, which was about 4 or 5 years ago. The problem I've got is, If I was to bring my plans to fruition, and I would have to back away from ScareTour, or I would have to back away from my reviews, because the one thing we pride ourselves on is we are the only independent scare attraction review site out there. You know, we aren't affiliated with anyone. We don't receive, you know, okay, people invite us to their events and whatever, but they still might get a good or a bad review. You know, we've been doing this for years. We've upset a few people with our reviews along the way. We've also really pleased some people. So if I was to then start running my own attraction, I'd have to go, well, how can I realistically, if I say open an attraction just down the road from where I am, and then went to Fairhaven Valley, which is just down the road, and actually said, you know what, it wasn't very good, they just turn around and say, well, you're only saying that because you want people to come to your attraction. So
yeah,
if I was to do what I want to do, I would have to step away from ScareTour reviews. And I don't want to do that at the moment because it's popular and everything goes on. But yeah, if I got my way and I had a little bit of money behind me, because I've got some big ideas, but I'm not gonna do anything small and remote. So yeah, maybe if I win the lottery this weekend, things might change. But at the moment, it's all about trying to bring people together, work together. You know, there are some factions within the industry. Lee will know. Anybody who's worked in the industry will know different people have tried different things in the past. As I said, there's been a number of people tried to break, you know, try and take ScareCon away from me, trying to do other things, you know, other review websites pop up and a lot of them fail. Some, you know, some keep going. But, you know, we've been doing this for a very long time. I've been doing ScareCon for a long time. You know, people obviously seem to like what we're doing, and I don't want to lose that at the moment. We've got great momentum. We're generally respected. But also, we are bringing the industry together. And I think if we didn't do ScareCon and get people talking and get people together and get people sharing, as Lee said, you know, Lee's been coming for 4 or 5 years. And yeah, there's been issues between different people, but generally people want to be friendly, want to have a laugh and want to work together. And if we can all work together to make this industry better, it's better for everyone, because somebody comes to one of Lee's attractions and then says, oh, I think I might go to something in the other side of the country or do that. Or they learn more about the industry and more people get to know what we're doing and why we're doing it. It benefits everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like anything else. It's a growing industry, and you're never going to have the harmony of everybody getting on. We in the last time we talked to Philip and sort of just briefly twigged like on the East Coast West Coast problem in America with they've got a sort of rivalries, and the fact is that it's always going to happen. And as the attractions get bigger and there's more companies, then obviously the divide's going to become more. Is that, and you know, it's good that, you know, that we can all get together once a year and sort of and all sit and just try to learn off each other, because, you know, that's what we need. It's such a good thing, ScareCon, and you know, we can have a full intensive day learning stuff, and then at least we get to get drunk at night.
Exactly, and that's what it's all about, getting drunk at night.
Totally. I mean, the scare ball is that if anybody's not ever heard of what happens after ScareCon is that we have an absolute wonderful scare ball, and everybody, or 95% of people, will get dressed up, and we sort of get some ridiculous costumes on, and we just have a good laugh, and then obviously the over the last couple of years Michael's brought the scars, so we get a little water ceremony as well, but is that I always think that, you know, ScareCon is great, but the scare ball is still my best night of the year. I think it's just great.
Yeah, thanks, Lee. I must admit, I introduced it a few years ago only because it was about 5 or 6 years ago. I found myself, we were at 4 a.m. We were all stood in the walkabout in Birmingham, like dancing away, and I thought, hold on, half of the people who've been with me all day are now partying here. So The ball has changed now, and we've had different types of live entertainment and whatever. But people do want to just get together and talk. And especially if, you know, say Lee's been up on stage talking about something, people might want to come up to him and thought, oh yeah, what you were saying about what you did there was really good. And it's just the opportunity for everyone to get together. But we have a laugh with the Circus of Horrors. It's pretty shocking and whatever. But the key thing this year is, we had a problem with the licensing hours last year, so we just after the show had finished and we turned the music up and everyone was ready to dance and party, and then we got kicked out by a very stroppy security guard. We got a much later license.
Didn't you join us because we were sat in a car park while 4:30?
Well, this is quite funny. We were in the hotel, and there's a really amazing photo at about 4 a.m. Sam Cousins has still got his dress on but wearing my cape. The two guys from the houses that October built, you know, the Hollywood movie, Bobby and Zach, they left Fort Park and went on a beer run at 2 a.m. and managed to come back with a bottle of whiskey, a few extra beers and a couple of tins of lager, and we were still drinking about 4:30 or 5:00 the next morning. And this year we'll do all that, and then we'll go and ride the Big Dipper, the Scenic Railway at Margate.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I'm not coming then.
Yeah, I know last year and obviously this year as well, but do you think you'll ever go back to doing the scare attraction after the scare ball?
The evening event, the overnight.
Yeah, yeah, because I mean, obviously Blackpool had theirs, and then obviously we had the absolute fantastic vigil.
Yeah, we did it three times, didn't we? So we did scare rooms in the Village Hotel in Dudley, which unfortunately nobody told that I'd got full approval from the hotel we could do it, but they put us in the middle of a floor of people who actually wanted to sleep, so they didn't appreciate what was going on. And the night manager hadn't been told, so something like 3 a.m, we had to curtail the things. But we still woke everyone up with a chainsaw the next morning. Blackpool was all night and was pretty relentless, and poor people trying to sleep in their rooms, and we were just that just got a bit crazy. And then we tried something different with the vigil. The vigil, part of it worked, part of it didn't. It ended sooner than I hoped it was going to. It was meant to be an all-night event, but of course, because I was behind the scenes, I wasn't controlling a lot of the daily thing. I would love to do it, but it's hard work for me because I'm so busy organising the event. The event during the day, running around. By the time I've got off stage about 10:30 after the awards, that's when I first start drinking. And anyone who knows me knows I like drinking a lot. So if I'm only having my first drink about 10:30, I'm going to catch up. And by that point, I'm so shattered. All I want to do is relax and chill. And the thought of then running scare rooms or anything else like that. So maybe what I need to do is, if we find a nice hotel in the future, is outsource it to somebody, because they were a hit. People did enjoy them.
Yeah.
It was such a great night. I mean, and you say about it finished early. Well, it did finish early, but you know, I think the paranormal investigation that we all did drunk afterwards were probably as memorable as the vigil.
Crazy night.
Oh, right. Very, very so, yeah.
Right. I'm sure this could go on for a hell of a lot longer.
I'm sure it could.
But we're going to have to wrap it up. Michael, I'm sure we'll have you on again at some point.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
absolutely. Cool. Right. Well, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. I hope everyone has enjoyed it. Anything you want to plug, Michael?
I just want to plug, obviously, for news and reviews and stuff like that. Check us out at www.scaretouruk.com. If you're interested in ScareCon, there are only, we've sold well over 75% of the tickets, but we can always squeeze one or two extra people in. ScareCon has been held on Friday the 13th of May at Dreamland Margate. The website is www.scarecon.org. Tickets are £55 in advance, or if you want to come for just the evening, we've got the special evening rate of just £30, but the £55 rate includes all of the trade shows, all of the talks, access to two live scare attractions, behind the scenes at those scare attractions, access to Dreamland and all the rides, access to the Scare Ball, the Scare Awards, live entertainment from the world famous Circus of Horrors, and live entertainment, and then music until late, and it also includes an evening meal. I think I've sold it quite well, don't you think? www.scarecon.org.
Cool. As I say, if it wasn't so bloody far away, we'd be coming again.
Oh, you're just a win.
Yeah, whatever. Cool.
Frequent fear.
Right, well, that's going to wrap it up. Lee, do you want to let everyone know how they can get in touch?
Yeah, they can get in touch with us at facebook.com/frequentfear. Twitter @frequentfear. They can email us at info@frequentfear.co.uk or visit our website, which I'm going to actually sit down tomorrow and actually update, at frequentfear.co.uk.
And of course, if you are listening to us on iTunes, please go and subscribe to the show and leave us a rating and review when you're there, because it lets other people know what we're doing here. Whether it's good or bad, that's entirely up to you.
And if you're listening on Stitcher, please rate us on there too, and don't forget to check out our partners at nightmarishconjurings.com.
Conjurings. Conjurings. You can also find us on the Haunted Attractions Network. What is it called? Yes. The Haunted Attractions Network app. We're on there as well, which is pretty cool.
Which is very, very good.
Yes. So, I guess that's it. So, for Michael and Lee, I have been Lee. And this has been the Frequent Fear Podcast. No, you can't be lean. Ha!